So the reading today is going to come from 1 Corinthians 13. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all the mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be settled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part that I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love.
Thanks, Chris. Morning. I never tire of hearing that chapter and the description of what love is and what it does and how it helps us to interact with one another. And we'll maybe get into that just a little bit later. In putting an introduction together to what I want to talk about just for a few moments this morning, I was kind of thinking about some of the songs over the course of the last 30, 40 years, whatever, that had the word love in it. The first one that came to mind, and this one has been replaying through my mind over and over a good part of the night and all morning today, is I Think I Love You by the Partridge Family. Now, where that came from and why it will not go away and why I even remember some of the lyrics to that song remains a mystery, but it's there. The Love Boat theme, love, exciting and new. The Captain and Tennille's, love will keep us together. Ironically, Tennille filed for divorce a few months ago, and they are apparently kaput. Love did not keep them together, or it was a lack of love or something, but they were in their 70s. That one's kind of a mystery as well, but love will keep us together. The Doors, one of the great opening lines of all time. Hello, I love you. Won't you tell me your name? Doesn't seem to fit, but it was a nice little hit for them. I'm Guilty of Love in the First Degree by Alabama. And then the soft ballad classic by Iron Butterfly, In a Gata Da Vida, Baby, Don't You Know That I Love You, which still remains kind of an interesting song if you listen to the long version, but whatever. We think of the simplicity of love. I was talking to my supervisor at work one day last week in the midst of another brilliant idea that someone came up with. Basically, my job entails picking up dirty clothes, getting them back to our plant. We clean them, I return them, and it's pretty simple. I mean, we're dealing with dirty clothes here. It doesn't take rocket science, although some of the chemicals we use are kind of neat to watch them work on various fabrics. But it doesn't require a lot of deep thought in order to accomplish my job, but it seems like about every other week somebody comes up with some kind of a program to make the job way harder than it really needs to be. Love is not that way. Now, we can make it that way, and we can place ourselves in a position where I don't know how I got here, and love isn't very evident, but love is pretty simple. We live in an angry world. I got to noticing the last week in particular and thinking about what I was going to say this morning a little bit. just the number of vehicles that abuse the right turn on red after stop law. And if there was ever a law that, in my opinion, should be repealed, that's one. Most motorists, at least in the sections of town that I drive in a lot, it's kind of, you pull up to a stop sign, and if you can dart out in front of the other car, that's kind of the message that the law intended to mean. It didn't really mean to come to a complete stop and gasp, wait 3 or 4 or 5 seconds before you pull up behind a vehicle. No, no, no. We've got to get out there in front and test my engine against your engine and my skill against your skill. And then if you were to, say, honk, which maybe I've done a time or two because it was a little too close, some of the looks and other things that go along with that are kind of interesting. We read in the newspaper every day of violent acts. In fact, I typically don't even read the front section anymore because it's too depressing. I don't want to start my day that way, nor do I wish to end it that way. I know these things go on, and if it's something that is vital to my existence, I hear it on the radio while I'm driving around, it's horrible. Sharon and I, several years ago, were talking to Karen Skinner after a class we'd had, and it just came up in the course of what we were discussing in the class, raising our kids, who were all teenagers at the time. And not that any of them were doing anything that a typical teenager didn't do. They were all good kids, wasn't worried about it particularly, knew they'd be fine, or prayed they would. But Karen made a statement that in raising children has stuck with me for 25 plus years. And asked how she dealt with a particular situation, she simply said that I loved them through it. Love doesn't always work that way in raising kids. And I don't mean for this, what I'm saying this morning, to be the end all be all and that there is nothing else that we need to contemplate ever. There were times that I never doubted that my dad loved me. Sometimes he showed his love through his right hand, applied to my posterior. But I knew he loved me nonetheless. I also was pretty well confident that I deserved whatever it was I got in the way of punishment. But the love came through regardless, because I knew he was, in his own words, doing it to help me because it hurt him way worse than it did me. No, Dad, it didn't. But I understand what you're saying, or at least I do now. So I'm not just up here talking about love, and okay, we'll just love everybody through it, and this is all. No, there's more to it than that. But this morning I want to focus on a few verses regarding love and our relationship with one another, and hope we, if nothing else, that we're reintroduced to some verses that we already know and some concepts that we're already well familiar with, but just be sure that we have these things in place and are practicing them in our everyday life. That's all. One song that I didn't mention regarding love came from kind of maybe it was an unusual source, but maybe it wasn't, in watching his life and the way he interacted with others. And while he did some really bizarre things in his few short years, John Lennon penned a song that All You Need Is Love. Now, I'm a big Beatles fan, and they got into some things that they should not have gotten into, and John Lennon was certainly no innocent in many phases of his life. But this was an interesting song in an interesting time, and Lennon's thought was, you know, hey, if we could just quit fighting amongst ourselves and find some way, some common ground, and love one another and get along and build each other up and make society a better place. I don't know, take that for what it's worth, but it was an interesting song. And we're going to kind of start there this morning, that all we need is love. It isn't, but we're going to start there. Leviticus, the 19th chapter and the 18th verse, we go all the way back to the very beginning of the Israeli nation. And somehow in my mind over the years, I'd kind of developed this thought regarding Israel, that as long as they performed the letter of the law, that God didn't really care about their attitude as far as one to another. I knew on some level this probably wasn't exactly accurate. But until I got to reading later on, several years ago, that I realized how badly misinformed I had been. God expected his people, from the very beginning of his people, to show this kind of love for one another. Leviticus 19 and 18. You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself, I am the Lord. In fact, you back up and read this entire 19th chapter, and it is just full of wonderful things that God expected his people to do with and toward one another. Very, very reminiscent of what we're expected to perform today in our interactions with our brethren, to love one another as yourself. What a neat concept. And this is very early on. Matthew, the 5th chapter and verse 44. We'll have a few verses today, and hopefully by the end of this thing I can kind of tie this in a bow and wrap it for us. Jesus talking, he said, well, back up to verse 43. You've heard that it was said, you'll love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, to love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who despitefully use you and persecute you. Well, now, wait a minute, Jesus. You're saying that if somebody does something really, really rotten to me, then I'm not supposed to respond in kind, just to teach them a lesson and to show them how much it's hurtful, and that maybe by doing so, they won't do it again? That's exactly what Jesus is saying. And look at what we are expected to do. And as we look at this verse, place yourself in a situation that maybe someone has hurt you, possibly deliberately went out of their way to injure you in some fashion, whether it was mentally, physically, whatever it might have been. Jesus says to love your enemies, to bless those that curse us, to do good to those that hate them, to go out of our way to commit a kind, nice act, to play nicely with one another, and to pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Don't hang on to your anger. Don't let hate get a foothold in your life, in your mind, in any fashion. And about the best way to do this is to place in your mindset the idea that I'm going to pray for this person, and that's tough, or can be tough. But it's real doable, or Jesus would never have asked us to do it. All we need is love. Love our enemies, all the way to praying for them and getting this all out of our systems. In John, the 13th chapter, let's look at verses 34 and 35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. You know what one of the worst things that somebody could say about any one of us might be? You're a Christian? Can you imagine living your life or interacting with people in such a fashion that people would be surprised if they found out that we were trying to be Christ-like? And I pray that has never been the situation with any of us. But to love one another as Jesus has loved us. And take a moment as we're talking about this to think about how Jesus did love us, how he showed his love for us time and time and time again up until his death, the ultimate sacrifice. And then ask yourself if you would be willing to be that persistent in showing love for people that were trying to do bad things to you and in the end would put you to death. Can we be that consistent with the love that Jesus wants us to have for one another? In John, the 15th chapter, moving ahead just a couple of chapters, verses 12 and 13. This is my commandment, and you'll notice he keeps saying that. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Okay, we've talked about that. Greater love has no man than this, that a man lay down one's life for his friends. Now that's pretty much the bottom line. What's the old expression? That's where the rubber meets the road. I don't know that I like that expression, but I'll throw it up there anyway. I guess it fits. If we lay down our life for somebody, that's the ultimate that we can show someone that we love them. But let's go one step further. In 1 John, the 3rd chapter, now let's look at verses 16 and 17 just for a moment. By this we know love, because he laid down his life for us, and we all also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. Okay, we get what Jesus is going for here. That's bottom line. Verse 17, however, but whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? In 58 and a half years, I have never been called on to die for somebody in any situation. Now, there are some, I say this to my shame by using the word some, that I would willingly die for. I need to be willing to die for a whole lot more than just some. And that's kind of a work in progress in my own head. But we need to not only be willing to die for someone, but verse 17, since we're probably not going to be called to do that necessarily, how about if we see someone that is lacking in food or in clothing or in an adequate place to live or transportation, whatever it might be, it could be a dozen things or more. We don't have to die for them, but do we have the proper mindset in us that because of our love for them, we're going to give of our own means so that someone else might have at least a portion of what God has blessed us with? To lay down our lives, but more likely we're going to be needed to help a brother in need. Romans, the 13th chapter, verses 8 through 10, tells us to owe nothing but to love one another. We know, and we've talked about many times, that we're to be good stewards of the blessings that God gives to us. And it's best if we can get through life and not ring up a whole bunch of debt and do silly things with our resources that would cause problems for ourselves or for others. We do owe love, however. From the day that we accept Jesus, or even before that, until the day we pass from this earth, we owe love to one another. 1 John, the 4th chapter, verses 7 through 11, tell us the same thing, simply to love one another. Do you suppose there's a reason that Jesus, through John, just repeats this over and over and over again, much like we've been asked to partake of this memorial service every Sunday morning ad infinitum? Because if it's not just stuck in front of our faces too many times as people, we tend to forget. We overlook things. We let it get by us in the course of living a very, very busy life. Whoever in my past told me that as I got older and started approaching retirement age, et cetera, my kids are grown and gone, that life would get easier, basically was telling me an untruth. It's way busier now than it ever was. I cannot simply keep up. Of course, it's also because I'm much, much slower. But keeping up with things is quite a bit of a challenge. But we need to keep this in front of us, and John does a wonderful job through his writings, as do the other writers. God's trying to hammer this point to us, to love one another. Hebrews, the 13th chapter in the first verse, tells us to let brotherly love continue. And then it goes on in the next verse to talk about entertaining strangers. Strangers, for some, have entertained angels unaware. But to let this brotherly love continue. Don't just start it and be hit and miss, but do it consistently all the time. One of my favorite passages in the New Testament is in the 7th chapter of the book of Luke, and I probably have referenced this two or three times simply because I guess I like it so much. I think it's a neat passage. Luke, the 7th chapter, about verse 44 and 47, Jesus finds himself at Simon's house, and he has gotten there. Of course, the roads back then were basically dust and probably some gravel. I don't know, but they weren't paved roads by and large where Jesus was walking. You get dirty, you get tired, you get sweaty, and the job of a host, if you will, was to wash a guest's feet, to give them something to drink, to basically make them feel comfortable when they got there to take care of a guest's needs. And a situation has arrived, and Simon has kind of said some things probably he should not have said. And in verse 44, Jesus turns to the woman, and we'll understand the context here in a second. It says to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet, but she has washed my feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head." Can you get a mental image on this one? That here Simon hasn't done a thing for Jesus, who has come to spend some time in his house. But this woman has come up and washed his feet with her tears and dried them with her hair. Now that's kind of a neat mental image. Moving on. "You gave me no kiss, but this woman has not ceased to kiss my feet since the time I came in." And we're getting a really good picture here of not only Simon and his lack of love and feeling and hospitality, at the very least, and we're getting a really good picture of this woman who has done some really wonderful things. "You did not anoint my head with oil, but this woman has anointed my feet with fragrant oil and has spent a lot of money doing it, which was part of the impetus for his attitude here, I believe. 47. Therefore I say to you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, the same loves little. Now let's shift on our talking about love just a little bit, and our love for one another and the actions that we should have for one another. And think about what happens if we do show a lot of love toward one another like we're supposed to. We get forgiven more. Because the more we love and we put ourselves out there and we do good deeds, the more our Father is willing to forgive us of our sins. And it's kind of a neat relationship. Love a little, maybe get forgiven a little bit. You love a little more, okay, I'll forgive you some more. Love a ton like we're supposed to be doing, and God's going to forgive us a ton if our head's in the right heart, in the right place. Going along with this, not only are we forgiven more because we love more, but in Matthew, the 6th chapter, verses 14 and 15, we find that as we forgive one another, God is able to forgive us. If I don't love and I don't forgive others and hold grudges and have kind of a mean spirit in me, we place God in a really bad situation for him, because he would love to forgive us and wants us to be saved. But he can't, because I'm not loving and I'm not forgiving. Moving on to Matthew 5 and 7, where we're told that we will be shown mercy as we show mercy to others. Still part of this love package. So if I don't love and I don't forgive and I don't show mercy, then we've placed God in the position of not being able to show us any love, of any forgiveness, or of any mercy, things that we absolutely have to have in order to be saved. What a neat passage. So the more we do what we're supposed to be doing, and we'll talk about how we're supposed to be doing it here in just a second, the more God is able to do for us on the flip-flop. And here we go. 1 Peter, the 1st chapter. And I'm going to turn and read this one because I don't want to get it wrong. 1 Peter 1 and verse 22. Since you have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit, first, in sincere love of the brethren, second, love one another fervently with a pure heart. We have maybe all, or at least a lot of us, have known people that can put on a smile and work their way through a crowd and look really good. But underneath, you kind of wonder if maybe it's not quite the same inside as the outside appearance. And Jesus addresses that at length in Matthew's gospel as well. To love one another sincerely, to get ourselves in a position to where we really mean it. I really love you all. Look around the audience here for a second. Now, we've got a lot of visitors here this morning, and we're absolutely thrilled to have you, and it's quite a blessing. So, I don't know, take this back to your home congregations or whatever, but look around just a second for who's sitting in this audience. We're all we have. The world doesn't like us. They don't like our message. They don't like the way we conduct ourselves, even though it's what we're all supposed to be doing. And they would like to see us go quietly, or maybe not so quietly sometimes, go away. We're not going to do that. We're going to love them through it as best we can. But this love that we have for one another is such a neat thing, but it needs to be sincere. We need to really mean it. Now, I can go out in the world as kind of a route salesman, and I can put a smile on, and I can go up to somebody's door and try and sell them on our services. And yeah, I sincerely hope that they do it because it affects my paycheck. But beyond that, you know, there's really not a whole lot of, we're probably not going to be buddies and we're not going to a Royals game together, that kind of a thing. I want your money. You know, I'll be right up front here, and I'm sure they know that. So that's an absolutely different thing than putting on a smile and coming here and pretending to love somebody. No, this is sincere, and it's a fervent thing. John 3 and 16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son. Think about that for a minute. I have 3 kids and 9 grandkids. Tremendous blessing. And a wonderful wife. I cannot get my hands around the idea of giving any one of those up to die if it were my decision, much less to die at the hands of somebody that hated me. Think about what God did, and I know we have at times. That is absolutely remarkable, and I don't understand it, and will never understand it. But he did it because he loves us and simply wants us to love him and to love one another that same way. We read in Galatians, the 5th chapter, starting in verse 22, the fruits of the Spirit. And love is right there at the head of the list. And what a neat list this is. When we get all of these things in our lives and we're exhibiting these fruits, what a wonderful person we can be out in the world helping one another. Chris is reading a 1 Corinthians 13 this morning, the love chapter. What a wonderful way to express what love is and what love does. The things it is and the things it isn't. And time's failing me, so I don't have time to go back and comment on anything in particular. But you know the chapter, you know what it says, you know what God wants us to glean from this chapter, and how important love is. Faith, hope, and charity are the three things that Paul ends this chapter with. Hebrews 11 and 6 tells us that without faith, it's impossible to please God. So we understand that faith is incredibly important in our lives. Romans 8 and 24, maybe. We are saved in this hope. So we know that hope is very, very important. If we have no hope, then we're not going to do all of the other things that's required of us. And however important faith and hope are, love is more important in our lives and in our interactions with one another. We see things every day that show us God's love for us. I've got a little tiny box in my junk drawer that I keep special things. And I can't just pull the one set out naturally. Set of car keys. And if you drive much or you're into automobiles at all, you notice that these are a real old set of car keys because it just has the single row of whatever those things are called instead of the doubles that you get in car keys now. It's got a little horse emblem on the back side of it. These came from a 1966 Ford Mustang. The last time I was able to use these keys was on the evening of September 28, 1972. Car started and ran fine for about 10 miles, till I slid off the road in a rainstorm, rolled the thing over going down a hill, and almost killed myself. By all rights, maybe I should be dead. I keep these keys for two reasons. One, it was a neat car, and I just couldn't bear to let them go to the junkyard with the car. And secondly, it reminds me of God's love for me. Maybe I would have lived had God not gotten involved. I will never know. But I have chosen for 41 and a half years to believe that God spared me for some reason. Because I saw that car in the tow lot the next day and there wasn't a whole lot left of it. And I came out of that thing, not in real whoopee shape, but I came out of the thing. Look for things in your life every day that show God's love for you. The fact that we're all here this morning is God's love. We all have clothing. We all had transportation here. We're here able to spend time with one another because of God's love. I can draw at least one more breath in this life because of God's love for me. Stop and think of something. I know I'm running out of time. I want to wrap it. We think of God's care for his people because of his love. Look at the story of Noah and think of it this way. We think of Noah, and what's one of the first things we think of as we read this story or whatever, we think of the destruction on a grand Old Testament scale, don't we? The water coming down for days and days and days. The number of people and animals that are wiped out through this deluge. And the fact that only 8 people are saved out of all of this because of their obedience to God. What if we look at this story not as a story of mass destruction, but if we look at this story as God's love and rather salvation for the people that obeyed God? It's not a bad story by any means, But it's a wonderful story if we obey God. It's a story of salvation, not destruction. Look at God taking care of Abraham as he wandered about place to place with his tents and the many things that befell Abraham. But look what came through his family. Look at the story of God's providential care of Joseph in Egypt, how he rose from being thrown into prison for something he didn't do, didn't want to do, tried to get away from, to rise to the second ruler in the nation of Egypt. Think of the stories of Moses and the children of Israel when they were in Egypt, and God's deliverance of this people as he formed this mighty nation that he had promised to Abraham. The miracles after miracles after miracles that God performed, showing his people that he was in fact the Lord, as we read in Leviticus the 19th chapter. Think of God's care for Joshua and the people as they conquered the promised land. Think of God's care for David, for Esther and Mordecai, for Daniel, who rose to be the third ruler in the Babylonian nation shortly before its demise, and on and on and on. And think of God's providential care for each one of us today. And what does he ask? To love one another. God didn't give us a complicated set of rules to follow. I'd have been lost as an Old Testament Jew with all of the offerings and the things that they had to be expected to know and to do. Way too much for my small mind to assimilate and put together and keep in some kind of coherent order. You should see my notes. But God asked us some very simple things. And at the top of the list is love. A sincere, fervent love for one another that causes us to act toward one another and toward the world in such a fashion that, according to the book of Matthew, they see God in our actions. And if we're not getting it done, what better time to start than right now? Because God wants to show us favor. He wants to forgive us, he wants to show mercy, and he wants to show us love, and he can't do it unless we do it to him and to each other. We'll close our thoughts this morning. I'm sorry I ran a few moments over. If there's anyone here that would like to be the beneficiary of God's promises and his gifts, it's a really easy thing to do.